Last week we saw a parable that Jesus taught about a man named Lazarus. Today we're going to see a different Lazarus. This one's a real Lazarus. This one was a real person. This is not a parable. It's a real story. And it's a very close friend of Jesus named Lazarus who died. And we'll see the story there. And it's got a lot of lessons for us. Now, this family that Lazarus belongs to, is a family that we've seen before. About a month ago, we studied about them, and we saw them back in Luke chapter 10, starting at verse 38. This story might be familiar to you from when we looked at it before. It says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. So we had this story where Jesus was passing through these villages, and he met up and was welcomed into this household of this family that included Martha, who apparently owned the home. We kind of talked about that back then, and a sister, Mary. And we find out elsewhere that they have a brother, Lazarus, and it's this family that we're going to talk about here. We don't know for sure when Jesus first met this family. This story that we have in Luke 10 is the first that we get to meet this family. Okay? Now, in that story, if we just read the rest of the story, because it's real short, what lesson was it that we learned when we looked at that? Going on. Verse 40, but Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you're worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it'll not be taken from her. So the lesson here, and we looked at this last time, was not a lesson on that we should spend our time at Jesus' feet and not serve, like Martha was doing, but rather we should not get worried and caught up in all the little details, all the details and worries of life that keep us from hearing God. Okay? We saw that it's not a matter of do I worship or do I serve, but rather Jesus said in Luke 4 verse 8, he said, it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. So we are called as Christians to both worship him and to serve him. It's not an either or. Okay? But we can't let, regardless of what we do, whether we're worshiping or whether we're serving, we can't let distractions get in the way. We can't get caught up in the details and the worries that come with a lot of those details and lose sight of what it is that we're really doing in terms of serving him or worshiping him. Okay? Now, this family, a little bit about this family. Where did this family live? This village where Jesus and his disciples came through and Martha opened up her house. John 11 says, now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. And about that village we see in verse 18 that Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem. And we talked about this a few weeks ago, that Bethany was basically a suburb of Jerusalem. Right on the other side of the Mount of Olives, as you go east out of Jerusalem, you go down to the Kidron Valley, up the Mount of Olives, and on the eastern slope of the Mount of Olives was this village called Bethany. Okay? And so that's where this family was from. Now Jesus became very close to this family. We see an example of that in Matthew 21, verse 17. And he left them and went out of the city to Bethany, where he spent the night. Okay, this is the first night of Jesus' last week. And what we get the picture of is whenever Jesus was in Jerusalem, at least from the time of the story in Luke 10 on, but maybe even before that, he would spend his days in Jerusalem, spend his days teaching in the temple, and then that night he would head out to the Mount of Olives. He would spend the evening praying with his father at this garden on the mountain, the Garden of Gethsemane or the Garden of the Olive Press. And then after that he would go on to Bethany where he would spend the night at Martha's house and then get up early in the morning and be back in the temple again the next morning. Okay? So he apparently got very close to this family because he spent a lot of time with them. Okay? So let's go back to, let's look at this story. Now where, at what time frame in Jesus' ministry does this take place? I know I've asked this a lot, but it's good to keep things in perspective. In John 10, starting at verse 22, which is the chapter preceding, we see that then came the Feast of Dedication at Jerusalem. It was winter, and Jesus was in the temple area walking in Solomon's colonnade. The Feast of Dedication is what we know today as Hanukkah. Okay, it's a celebration of the purification of the temple under the Maccabees, and that was in December, sometime in December, and this is the last Hanukkah that Jesus celebrates, because it's the following spring that Jesus then is arrested and killed in Jerusalem. So we've got just a few months left, less than a half of a year left when this story takes place. Well, at that time, back at the Hanukkah story, we saw that Jesus had gotten in trouble with some church leaders. Now, it's been a while since we've looked at that, so let's look at that again. John 10, starting at verse 24, says, "The Jews gathered around him, saying, 'All right, how long will you keep us in suspense? If you're the Christ, tell us plainly.' Jesus answered, 'I did tell you, but you didn't believe. The miracles I do in my Father's name speak for me.'" And we'll skip a bunch, going down to verse 30. "I and the Father are one. Again, the Jews picked up stones to stone him, but Jesus said to him, 'Okay, I've shown you many great miracles from the Father. So for which of these are you stoning me?' 'We're not stoning you for any of these,' replied the Jews, 'but for blasphemy, because you, a mere man, claim to be God.'" So here we see at this time at Hanukkah, they tried to stone him. They tried to kill him because he said, "I and the Father are one." He said he was God. That's what he said. That's what he meant. That's what they understood. And that is blasphemy for a mere human to call himself God. You're bringing God down to man's level. And the penalty for blasphemy was death by stoning. And that's what they were ready to do. So you see the friction that he had there. Well, but we know that that was not his time yet. His time had not yet come. His time would come where these Jewish leaders would be able to arrest and torture and kill Jesus. But that time wasn't yet. How did Jesus avoid getting killed at this time? Go on towards the end of the chapter here. We'll start at verse 37. Jesus says, "Don't believe me unless I do what my Father does. But if I do it, even though you don't believe me, believe the miracles, that you may know and understand that the Father is in me and I in the Father." Again, they tried to seize him, but he escaped their grasp. Then Jesus went back across the Jordan to the place where John had been baptizing in the early days. Here he stayed, and many people came to him. They said, "Though John never performed a miraculous sign, all that John said about this man was true." And in that place, many believed in Jesus. So we see that he escaped their grasp. How? We're not told how. Why? Because his time had not yet come. But we don't see him taking off and going back to Galilee. Okay, we've mentioned before that during this last half year of Jesus' ministry, he focused his ministry down in the south, down in Judea and in Perea, which is the area across the Jordan River from Judea. Okay. And that's where he goes. It says, to the other side of the Jordan River where John had been baptizing. Now, where was this place where John had been baptizing in the early days? We see that in the early chapters. Back in John chapter 1, verse 28, says that this all happened at Bethany on the other side of the Jordan where John was baptizing. This is a different Bethany. Okay, where Jesus went was where John had been baptizing, and it's this Bethany on the other side of the Jordan. But that's a different Bethany than the Bethany in today's lesson. The Bethany in today's lesson we saw is only 2 miles from Jerusalem. So there's about 20 miles that separated these two Bethanies. The Bethany of Judea and the Bethany of Perea. Okay, two different Bethanies. In fact, the Greek here in John 1:28 says Bethabara. Okay, so it's a variation of the word Bethany there. Okay. So that's the time frame and the location. So let's look at the story. There's a crisis. A crisis popped up in the home of this family. And what was that? Let's go back and reread starting at verse 1. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, so there we see the connection that Mary, Martha, and Lazarus are all siblings, was the same one who performed perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. Okay, that story there is referring to the one in John chapter 12 that we've looked at before too. So Lazarus, the brother in this family, was sick. Okay, that was the crisis. Jesus' friend Lazarus became sick. Now, Jesus has got lots of stories where he's healed the sick. So, okay, well, Lazarus is sick. Call the master. Call Jesus. We know he can heal him. Okay, so did Mary and Martha send word to Jesus? Did they ask Jesus to come and heal Lazarus? Verse 3. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. So it looks like they sent word to Jesus to ask him to heal Lazarus, but we don't see that they asked him to heal Lazarus. We see that they sent word to Jesus telling Jesus that Lazarus was sick. Okay, assuming an understanding that that Jesus would follow through and take care of the situation, take care of his friend. Well, how did Jesus respond to this news? Was he upset by it? Verse 4. When he heard this, Jesus said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it's for God's glory that God's Son may be glorified through it. So he was apparently not upset by the news. He knew this was going to happen. He knew about this. He knew what was going to happen from it, how it was going to turn out, and he knew why it was happening. And he pointed out to his disciples and to the messengers there that this is all for God's glory. So did this indicate that Jesus wasn't concerned about Lazarus? Verse 5. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. No, Jesus cared for them. He cared very much for them. He loved them. You know, here we get these great words. How would you like to be Lazarus or Mary or Martha and have your names recorded in the Bible as someone who Jesus specifically loved? What a great honor. What a great gift. But you know what? That is something that he has given us. The Bible does say that he does love each of us individually, just as he loved Mary and Martha and Lazarus. So having this love and concern for Lazarus, what did Jesus do? Okay, did he take off from wherever he was? It doesn't say where he was, but did he take off from wherever he was and get to Bethany as quick as he could so that he could help the situation and help Lazarus? Verse 6. Yet when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 more days. He didn't leave. He knew that this great friend of his, this friend that he loved, was very sick. He knew what was going to happen, and yet he didn't do anything about it. He stayed. He purposely did not go at that time. Now, what did his disciples think about it? Did they find that strange that Jesus would not go and take care of his friend? Next verses. Then he said to his disciples, okay, this is after a couple of days. He said to his disciples, okay, let's go back to Judea. But Rabbi, they said, a short while ago the Jews tried to stone you, and yet you're going back there? This is soon after the stoning incidents, or the attempted stoning that we saw back at the time of Hanukkah. And they are not surprised that Jesus didn't go to Bethany. In fact, they're surprised when Jesus says, hey, let's go. Because it's dangerous there. There's a lot of risk there. And they say, what do you mean go back to Judea? They want to kill you there. We need to stay away on this side of the Jordan River. His disciples saw great danger. So was it foolish for Jesus to risk his life to go see his sick friend? Luke 15 verse 13, Jesus said, greater love has no one than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. There was great risk to Jesus to go. People wanted him dead. People where he was going wanted him dead. But he had great love for his friend. He had great love for you and me, that he did lay down his life for us. Despite the great risk, he went back to Jerusalem. He went back to Jerusalem during the Passover that we're going to see when we come up to Easter time, and gave his life for us because he loves us so much. And that's what he was doing here. The risk didn't bother him because that was the purpose to which he came, is to lay down his life for his friends. But Jesus knew that his time for suffering and death had not yet come. So how does he try to point this out to his disciples? Verse 9. Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours of daylight? A man who walks by day will not stumble, for he sees by this world's light. It's when he walks by night that he stumbles, for he has no light." Jesus is the light of the world. While he was in the world, it was easy to see what God was doing. And Jesus was still in the world. His ministry had not yet finished. His time had not yet come. So, yes, while it appears humanly that there's a risk to go to Judea, to go to Lazarus, the light is still in the world and God is in control. Now, one note here, he says here, are there not 12 hours in a day? Well, you think about it, okay? It depends on daylight savings time, right? It depends if it's summer or winter, right? In terms of how many hours of daylight there are. Well, that's because we have these nice quartz watches that keep to the second very accurately. In those days, they didn't have that. Even the Swiss watches had not been invented yet. The closest thing they had to watches were sundials. And the sundial divided up the day into 12 equal hours. So if it was winter, those hours were physically shorter than the hours in the summer. There were always 12 hours in the day. Hour zero started when the sun came up, okay? Hour 12 was when the sun went down. So there were always 12 hours in a day. And that's what he was referring to here. Now what Jesus said here can be a little confusing, and it was confusing to his disciples, and Jesus knew that it was, and so Jesus went on and stated things a little bit more clearly. John 11, verse 11. After he said this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I'm going there to wake him up." Okay? So he straight out told his disciples that Lazarus has gone to sleep, and I'm going to go wake him up. So you may not have understood what I told you before, but maybe you'll understand this. So did disciples at least understand this simple and clear statement? Verse 12. His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he'll get better." Okay? When someone's sick, they need to sleep and rest it off, right? Jesus had been speaking of his death, but the disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So they were confused. They didn't recognize that Jesus was saying that Lazarus has died and I'm going to go raise him from the dead. They thought, well, Lazarus has fallen asleep. Well, yeah, he needs to sleep. He needs to get his strength back, right? Was Jesus using cryptic language here by saying that Lazarus was asleep? Is that something that they really should have understood, or was this just something that Jesus was kind of speaking this way that people wouldn't understand? Well, Daniel 12 verse 2 says, "Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt." And you can look in Matthew 9:24, Acts 7, 1 Corinthians 15, 1 Thessalonians 4, and you can see the same reference to death in terms of sleeping. So the metaphor that he gives here that Lazarus is asleep is not something that was uncommon or unheard of before, but the disciples didn't get it. Well, Jesus wasn't trying to speak unclearly, so how does he make sure and how does he clarify what he's really trying to say so that they'll understand? Next verse. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead." He made it very clear. All right, you know, when I said that Lazarus is sleeping, what I was saying is that Lazarus is dead. He has died. Okay, this is a past tense thing. He's not going to die. He's already dead. So he made that as clear as he could. Now, how did he feel about his disciples still not understanding things late in this late in the ministry? I mean, he's just a few months away from his death where he's going to be fulfilling his ministry, and his disciples are still not getting even some basic stuff. Going on, Jesus says in verse 15, "And for your sake, I'm glad I wasn't there, so that you may believe." So let's go to him. It's a good thing, Jesus said, that we weren't there to stop this from happening, because you are so slow to believe, you really need to see what's about to happen. You need it for your faith. You need it so that you can believe. Okay? I'm glad that what I'm about to do is going to help mature you spiritually, because you need that spiritual maturity. Well, so Jesus had commented, he said, you know, my time has not yet come, we're going to go, it's going to be okay. Did his disciples understand at least that part of it when he was talking about the 12 hours of daylight and that kind of thing? Verse 16, then Thomas, called Didymus, said to the rest of his disciples, let's also go so that we may die with him. Okay? No, they're still concerned about the risks there. They're still worried about being killed. They weren't paying attention to what Jesus was doing. They weren't paying attention to that Jesus just said that we're going to go, Lazarus has died, and I'm going to raise him from the dead. He just told them that, but they're concerned with, let's go die too. Okay? There's big risk there. We know that if we go to Judea, they're going to try to kill Jesus. They're going to try to kill us too. And here Lazarus is already dead, a close friend of Jesus's. You know, if we're part of Jesus, if we're going to live with Jesus, we're going to die with Jesus. Okay? So you see this bold statement of Thomas. Okay, Thomas gets a lot of bad rap, you know, as being the doubting disciple. To be honest, Thomas is only one of the 11 disciples that doubted. Okay? One of the disciples didn't doubt because he had killed himself, and that was Judas. Thomas just happened to not get to see Jesus until a week later. But all of them doubted. Thomas, his name is Hebrew for twin. The Greek word for twin is Didymus. So he was also called Didymus. People called him Didymus. He called him Thomas. They called him twin. So apparently he was a twin of somebody. We never see the connection of his twin, of who his twin was. But you do see he was convicted. Okay? But his faith was still a little weak. They didn't quite get it. And they were a little concerned about themselves here. Alright, so Jesus said, let's go to see Lazarus. Okay, I'm going to raise him from the dead. Now, Jesus had spent 2 extra days there. When the messengers came, he didn't take off right away. He had spent 2 extra days. So, did he wait those 2 days until Lazarus had died? Verse 17. On his arrival, Jesus found out that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Okay, he had already been in the tomb for 4 days. So regardless of how many days it took Jesus to get to Bethany from where he was, okay, there was no way that Jesus would have gotten there in time. Okay, because he had only waited 2 days, but Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. So his waiting was not to wait for Lazarus to die. Okay? Why the 4 days? We'll see that in a little bit as we go on. Well, what had happened during this time? Since he had been in the tomb for 4 days by the time Jesus got there, what about Mary and Martha? Were they there by themselves, mourning by themselves? Verse 18 to 19. Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. So no, they weren't by themselves. They were well-known people, or at least they had lots of friends, and friends from all over, most of which would probably be in the Jerusalem area because that's the big city nearby. Remember, Bethany was only 2 miles away from Jerusalem. Many people came to comfort them, to be with them. And that's the way things happen. A little bit about how death and burials and all that happened when someone died. Well, a body was in the house. When someone died, the body was in the house, and while the body was there, no one ate meat, no one drank any wine, they didn't wear any phylacteries, or didn't study, or do anything like that. Okay? There was no food that was prepared in the house or eaten in the presence of the dead. After the body was removed, then they would turn the furniture over. Okay? And rather than, if your chairs were turned over, then you wouldn't be able to sit on the chairs, mourners would sit on the ground or sit on some low stools or something. Okay? So things were kind of topsy-turvy from the situation. They would bury the bodies as soon as they could because the bodies would start decaying fairly quickly in the warm climate. They didn't embalm the bodies. Okay? Rather, you'll see as we see like Jesus' death, they put spices and fragrant things on the body, and that was just to kind of cut down some of the smell. It wasn't to preserve the body. So they would bury it as quickly as they could because of that. They would wrap the body in simple linen clothes. Okay, that was called a traveling dress. Now, it used to be, the tradition had been, that they would dress the body up, put them in their nicest suit or very expensive, magnificent robes and put valuables on them, all that kind of stuff. But the Rabbi Gamaliel, who was around Jesus' time, changed that tradition with orders to have him buried in the simplest linen robe, okay, and instructed other people to do the same. And so they had this linens that they would wrap the bodies with. They'd wrap the bodies, they'd wrap the hands, they'd wrap the feet and the head with separate linens. When they took the body to the gravesite, there would be a big funeral procession, and as many people as were able would join in that funeral procession. The mourning family would be in the front, and any women belonging to the family would be in the front of that family. When they got to the tomb, they would give some memorial speeches, and then after the ceremony, the mourners, the principal mourners, the main family, and the main people would then walk back between the where people had lined up on both sides of the road and walk back between the lines. The other mourners would then walk to the tomb and to give their respects, and then as they turn, they'd say, "Depart in peace," and go on. You wouldn't get a lot of talking. Everybody would be quiet and go back home quietly. The mourners were left alone with their sorrow, and people wouldn't talk to them. After the family went back home, friends of the family would bring food to them, okay? And the family would stay inside the home. The family would be given a meal of bread, eggs, and lentils. And the reason for the eggs, they'd be hard-boiled eggs and lentils, which are round grains, and that symbolizes how life always rolls to death, okay? So the roundness of those symbolize that. There'd be 7 days of deep mourning. The first 3 days of weeping, of crying, okay? And then after that 7 days was 30 days of lighter mourning. During this time of mourning, you couldn't anoint yourself, you couldn't put on shoes, you couldn't do any study or any business or even wash yourself during those 7 days. Friends and relatives would visit and come and join in the mourning and express sympathy, would come visit the family, and they would help with hysterical wailing, okay? Crying and wailing as loud as they could. The more noise they made, the more it showed the love for the person who had died. So that's what was going on when Jesus showed up. Lazarus' body had been in the tomb for 4 days, and so they were in the midst of these 7 days of mourning. The 3 days of deep wailing, of weeping, had passed, and it was the fourth day when they came here. All right. So when Jesus comes on the way, word gets to Mary and Martha that Jesus is coming, and it's kind of interesting to see how they kind of play their parts here. If you remember a little bit about Mary and Martha, verse 20. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Okay. Martha was one of action. Martha was one of taking charge. And when she heard that Jesus was coming, she didn't do the normal thing of waiting for Jesus to show up. Okay, remember, mourners in the family would stay at home. They wouldn't leave the house. They would wait for, people would come to their house. But when she heard Jesus was coming, knowing her love for Jesus, who Jesus is, she went out to see him. Mary stayed at home and continued to mourn there. Martha went to Jesus, and what she had to say showed two sides. It showed both her disappointment that Jesus hadn't taken care of the situation, but also that she still had faith. Verse 21, "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you'd have been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." So she was upset that Jesus had let Lazarus die. Jesus could have stopped that. But now that Lazarus is dead, she knows that Jesus can still do something. Okay, she doesn't know what, but somehow he can make things better because God will do whatever he wants, whatever he asks God to do. She said here, "If you'd only come when we sent for you, my brother would be okay." Well, if Jesus had left right then, we've already seen that he wouldn't have gotten there in time, right? Because Lazarus has already been dead for 4 days. But on the other hand, did Jesus really even have to go to Bethany to heal Lazarus? Remember back in John 4, and there's other examples too, but look at John 4, starting verse 46, the story here. Once more, when Jesus visited Cana in Galilee, where he had turned the water into wine, and there was a certain royal official whose son lay sick at Capernaum, which is quite a ways away. When this man heard that Jesus had arrived in Galilee from Judea, he went to him and begged him to come and heal his son who was close to death. The royal official said, "Sir, come down before my child dies." Jesus replied, "You may go. Your son will live." The man took Jesus at his word and departed. While he was still on his way, his servants met him with the news that his boy was living. So here you see Jesus healed this man's son from a distance, remotely. He could have done the same thing with Lazarus, right? Okay? The distance from Cana to Capernaum is probably no greater than wherever Jesus was in Perea to Bethany. So he could have healed Lazarus remotely, but that wasn't the plan. That wasn't the purpose of Lazarus getting sick. It wasn't the purpose of Lazarus dying. The purpose was that God's glory would be revealed, and that through that, Jesus would be glorified, and that people would grow in their faith. So let's see some of this. How did Jesus tell Martha that he would make things better, and did she understand him? Verse 23. Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he'll rise again at the resurrection on the last day." Okay? So he said, "Your brother will rise again." Now we know that Jesus is planning to raise Lazarus from the dead. Heck, that's the title of our lesson, right? But Martha goes, "Yeah, I know he's going to rise again in the resurrection." Okay? So she recognizes the resurrection there. Why did she think that? Well, look back at Isaiah. Okay, this concept of the dead being raised is not something that came about in the New Testament. Okay, Isaiah chapter 26 talks about what the Messiah would do. It says, "But your dead will live; their bodies will rise. You who dwell in the dust, wake up and shout for joy. Your dew is like the dew of the morning. The earth will give birth to her dead." So the Messiah would come and bring the resurrection of the dead. Okay. That's one of the things that the Jews were looking at, even though they were a little confused about what the Messiah would be. But they looked forward to the resurrection of the dead. Even the oldest book we believe in existence, the book of Job, talks about the resurrection from the dead. Okay? "I know that my Redeemer lives," is a phrase that Job says. But Martha wasn't going to have to wait for the end times, for Lazarus to rise from the dead, for her to see him again. So how does Jesus point that out to Martha, that the Messiah has brought this gift now, not later? Verse 25, Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this?" So he said, "I am the resurrection and the life. I'm the Messiah. I'm the one who brings the resurrection. So if you're looking for the resurrection of your brother, I'm here." Okay? Did Martha understand what he was saying? Verse 27. "Yes, Lord," she told him. "I believe that you are the Christ," which means Messiah, "the Son of God who was to come into the world." She believed. She understood. She revealed her faith in this confession that Jesus was the Messiah, was the Christ, was the Son of God, was the Savior that was going to come into this world. Okay. Now look at what Jesus said here. He said, "I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even though he dies." All right. Well, that's a conflicting sentence if you've ever heard one. What does he mean by "he who believes in me will live even though he dies"? Okay, if you're going to live, then that means you're not going to die, right? 1 Corinthians 15, we'll just read a few scattered verses, but the whole chapter talks about this. Starting at verse 20. "But Christ has indeed been raised from the dead, the first fruits of those who have fallen asleep. For since death came through a man, the resurrection of the dead comes also through a man. For as in Adam all die, so in Christ all will be made alive. But each in his own turn, Christ, the first fruits, and then when he comes, those who belong to him. And then verse 49, and just as we have borne the likeness of the earthly man, so we will bear the likeness of the man from heaven. I declare to you, brothers, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, nor does the perishable inherit the imperishable. Listen, I tell you a mystery. We will not all sleep, but we will all be changed. In a flash, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound, the dead will be raised imperishable, and we will be changed. So those who belong to him, okay, we saw in verse 23, will be raised, will be clothed with the imperishable. Okay, so even though we die, we will be raised again if we belong to him. And that's what Jesus is saying here. He who believes in me will live even though he dies. What about the next phrase? And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Okay, what does that mean? Whoever lives and believes in me will never die. So this means it's someone who hasn't died or whatever. Look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, starting at verse 16. For the Lord himself will come down from heaven with a loud command, with the voice of the archangel, and with the trumpet call of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. After that, we who are still alive and are left will be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. And so we will be with the Lord forever. So here Paul is telling the people in Thessalonica that whatever believers are alive at the time that Jesus returns will never die. We'll be caught up in the air and meet. First the dead will rise and meet up with the Lord, and then those who are alive will meet up with them as well. So that's what Jesus is referring to when he says, whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Martha has confessed her faith in Jesus. She believes that Jesus is still in control of the situation because God is still in control of the situation, and Jesus is the Son of God, the Messiah sent from God, the Savior of the world, who is going to come into the world to save us all. So whatever Jesus has planned, she's fine with. Okay, she trusts Jesus here. Well, she's gotten to see Jesus, but Mary hasn't. So Martha wants to give Mary a chance to go talk to Jesus, but you know, if Jesus were to come back to the house, there's all this crowd there and people are going to come to him, and you know, she wants to let Mary have her own time with Jesus as well. So how does she get Mary to go to Jesus without letting the crowd know that Jesus is there? Verse 28. After she had said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and is asking for you. So she went back, took Mary aside, and told her that Jesus wanted to talk to her. Okay? So did this work? Did it work to let Mary go privately talk with Jesus? Verse 29. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforting her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. Okay? So the intent was for it to work, but when the other Jews saw her take off, they thought, well, she's going to the tomb, and so they went to go with her to the tomb. So she didn't get to go see Jesus all by herself. She had a whole group of people follow her there. Martha had been upset. The first thing Martha had said when she saw Jesus is, Lord, if you'd only been here, my brother wouldn't have died. What about Mary? Did she have a better understanding that Jesus was in control of the situation? Verse 32. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. No, she had the same frustration. She was just as upset as Martha, said the exact same words. Did it bother Jesus that his friends and others were so upset? Next verse. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. So you see, he was touched. He was moved. He was deeply moved. And rather than talking further, rather than discussing things with Mary as he had with Martha, he said, okay, where's Lazarus? Where have you laid him? Okay, so he asked to be taken to see him. Well, how moved was he as they went along to the tomb? Verse 35. Jesus wept. This is the shortest verse in the Bible. And you can see Jesus was moved to tears. Is it because he was crying because Lazarus had died and there was no more hope for Lazarus? No. Why was he crying? Because he saw the hurt of those he loved. He saw the hurt of those around him. Okay? He was moved by that. You see the humanity of Jesus through this. You also see that emotions are not a bad thing. Okay? Jesus was like us in every way. He was tempted. He had suffering and pain. He had the same physical limitations we have. He had emotions. Okay? And you see those emotions happening here. When he cried, what did the people in the crowd think about that? Verse 36. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him? But some of them said, well, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? So they thought, well, okay, what about this Jesus? You know, here, he's supposed to be all powerful. He's got the power of God. He healed this man who was born blind. If you remember that story from a few weeks back, didn't he have the power to stop his great friend Lazarus, the one that he loved? See, he's crying over him. Didn't he have the power to stop, keep him from dying? Okay, so they were a little confused by it, but they're about to see what this is really all about. So did Jesus get over his emotion by the time he reached the tomb? Verse 38. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Okay? No, you see, he was still deeply moved. He still cared about the feelings of those that he was with. Now, it came to the tomb, and it says this tomb was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. And when people buried their dead in those days, okay, in Palestine, those who could afford it, the families who could afford it, would have a family tomb. And it would be either a natural cave or a cave that was man-made, okay, dug out of the rocks, dug out of the side of the mountain. And there would be an entrance chamber, and then when someone died, they would first lay the body in that entrance chamber, and then later on move it to a back chamber. These chambers were 6 foot long, 9 foot wide, 10 foot tall. Okay, that was typically the size of these things. They had shelves cut into the side walls to hold bodies. And they would lay the bodies on these shelves and just leave them there. And as time went on, the body would decay, and then all that was left would be a skeleton. And whenever they needed another shelf for another family member, they would take the bones of whatever's decayed the most, take the bones and put them in a bone box, or called an ossuary. And they would typically stack these bone boxes in the cave there, or in the tomb. This cave didn't have a door, okay? Rather, it was just a big opening, and they would have a large round stone and a groove right in front of the opening that the stone would roll in, and they would roll that stone over, and that would close it up and seal up the opening so that nobody could get in or out, no animals could get in or out, that kind of thing. Okay, and they would often put a cord across it with clay on the cord to make sure it was sealed and stayed closed. All right, so that's the kind of tomb that we're talking about here. Well, Jesus then asks, verse 39, he says, take away the stone. Okay? How does Martha react? Take away the stone, he said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there's a bad odor, for he's been in there for 4 days. Jesus asked for the stone to be rolled open. She thought that he wanted to go see his friend's body, but that friend's body would be very decomposed, you know, and it would smell very bad at this time, okay, because it's been in there for 4 days. Now, what they would do in those days, too, is that when someone died and they buried him, they would go back and check up on him for 3 days, every day for 3 days. They believed that the spirit hung around the body looking for an opportunity to get back in. And if it couldn't find a way to get back into the body by the fourth day, then the spirit would leave. Because by then the body would be too decomposed to recognize and to be able to continue on. Now, there was on occasion that the dead would come back to life. And that was really because the dead was never really dead in the first place. Without the medical tests and the medical ways that we have to confirm that someone had died, that they would bury someone who they thought might be dead, but they would mainly just be mostly dead, okay? But after checking for those 3 days, if they were still dead after 3 days, then they accepted that they were really dead. Now, here we have Lazarus, who's been dead for 4 days. So he's really, really dead. And that's part of the message here of him being in the tomb for 4 days, is this is not just a misdiagnosed death, but this is a real death. Lazarus is really, really dead. And everyone knew that. Okay? Well, Martha says, don't open the tomb. It's gonna stink really bad because he's been dead for 4 days. But how does Jesus remind Martha what he had said to the messenger 4 days earlier? What did he say before? He said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it's for God's glory so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Well, what does he tell Martha here? Verse 40, then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believed, you would see the glory of God? Okay, now it's time for you to see what this is really all about, to see the glory of God. So then we know what's going to happen, right? Jesus is going to raise Lazarus. So does he then pray to God, asking God to give him the power to raise the dead? Verse 41. So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you've heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. You see, he does pray to the Father, but he doesn't pray asking for the power because he already has the power. He prays thanking God that these people who are watching what's going on will recognize who he is and that the Father is in him and he is in the Father. What does he do? What kind of ceremony, what kind of hand gestures, abracadabra, all that kind of stuff does Jesus do to bring Lazarus back to life? Verse 43. When he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out! The dead man came out. His hands and feet were wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. What did he have to do? Nothing. He just called for Lazarus. He said, Lazarus, come on out. And Lazarus came out alive. How was Lazarus' resurrection similar to the one that we'll realize if we die before he returns? John 5, verse 28. Jesus said, do not be amazed at this, for a time is coming when all who are in their graves will hear his voice and will come out. Those who have done good will rise to live, and those who have done evil will rise to be condemned. When we are in our graves and Jesus returns, he will call to us, we will hear his voice, and we will come out. We will be raised from the dead. Okay? As Paul said in Thessalonians, the dead will rise to meet the Lord. And then those who are still living, who are belong to him, will also be raised up to meet them as well. So we'll rise when we hear the voice of Jesus, just as Lazarus did. Now, what happened as a result? What about the people who saw this? What did they think when they saw this? Verse 45. Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did, put their faith in him. That's exactly what God wanted. It's exactly what Jesus was wanting here. That's exactly the reason that Jesus performed miracles. Anytime Jesus performed a miracle, what was the purpose? Is to build faith. Is to start faith. Is to grow faith. Here we see people saw this. They knew Lazarus was dead. He was really, really dead. And yet now he's alive. And they saw the power of God work through Jesus here to do that. So they put, many put their faith in him. Okay? What's interesting then is in what also happened as a result. I'll just go on here in the next verses. Verse 46. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin. What are we accomplishing? They asked. Here's this man performing many miraculous signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and then the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. Then one of them named Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, spoke up, "You know nothing at all. You don't realize it's better for you that one man die for the people than the whole nation perish." Now, he didn't say this on his own, but as high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the Jewish nation, and not only for that nation, but also for the scattered children of God, to bring them together and to make them one. So, from that day on, they plotted to take his life. So when word of this miraculous raising Lazarus from the dead got to the Jewish leaders, what's interesting is they didn't dispute it. They didn't argue that no, Lazarus wasn't dead in the first place. But they said, wow, this guy's been doing these miraculous signs. And rather than disputing the miracle, they said, we gotta stop people from following him. He's doing all these miracles, but you know, if we let this go on, then the Romans are going to think that we don't have any control over the situation. We're going to lose our position. We're going to lose our wealth. We're going to lose all the great benefits that we have of our good relationship with the Romans now. So we got to shut him up. Okay? So they decided they needed to find a way to kill him, to stop him permanently. What's also interesting then is look at the next chapter in verse 9, chapter 12. It says, "Meanwhile, a large crowd of Jews found out that Jesus was there and came not only because of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well, for on account of him, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and putting their faith in him." Things continued to get out of hand for these Jewish leaders so that people, more and more Jews, turned to Jesus and started putting their faith in Jesus. And Lazarus was a walking billboard. People saw him. Nobody disputed that Lazarus had really died. And when they saw him alive, they go, wow, this man who raised him from the dead obviously is from God. And a lot of people put their faith in him. And that was too much for the Jewish leaders to handle. So this raising of Lazarus was the big straw that broke the camel's back for the Jewish leaders and made them say, okay, we've dilly-dallied around long enough with this guy. We need to shut him up permanently. In fact, let's get rid of this Lazarus guy while we're at it too, because as long as he's walking around, people are going to continue to follow Jesus. This is what's going to expedite what's going to happen on Jesus' last trip to Jerusalem. Let's pray. God, our Father, we thank you for showing your great power in many ways, the many ways that you show it through our lives each and every day, the ways that you show it through miraculous things that happen around us, the ways that you show us through the stories that we have in the Bible, the power that Jesus had over death, the power that Jesus has over death today, the power that we trust in, that when we die, that Jesus will raise us, just as he raised Lazarus, but raise us to eternal life, to be with you and to be with him and to be with each other forever. We thank and praise you in his name. Amen.